Part 3, Chapter 7, which is highly hermetic. Quote, "You do not capture feelings in language. It is in the language that you discover them, and then they can be passed on." Sid Nosavad, Personal Correspondence, December 29, 1993. "Ah," sighed Harvey, collapsing into the recliner when they arrived at the treehouse lounge. "I have something you might find interesting," said Anaximenes, handing him a manuscript. "I found this when I was cleaning under a table in the law library." "Ah, yes," said the captain. "The Adventures of Captain Harvey, Parts 1 and 2. I know it well." Harvey turned to the first pages and began to read. He was excited to find Mahogany again, on his whaling ship, the day he pulled him from the sea. A few pages later, he came upon Adelphine. She had not yet been born in 1979, and he paused to consider all the elements that were spread about the globe, animal, vegetable, mineral, which would have to come together to give her life. The captain was curious to see if the same scenes would unfold in the same order, or if the second reading would be different from the first. Perhaps the scenes would be the same, but he, at a different time in his life, would be a different reader, and the same words would tell a different tale. "It was written by somebody named Roland Twelves," said Anaximenes, "but I found his name on a war memorial in Memory Grove, so he must be dead." "I guess you'll have to publish the novel," said Harvey, looking up from the manuscript. "Me?" said Anaximenes. "Sure," said Harvey. "You can make a few changes, improve it as best you can." "But that's plagiarism," said Anaximenes. "Of course it is," said Harvey. "But who cares? Originality is an illusion born of forgetfulness. It's just one more fetish of our time, which is speeding dizzily to its death." "The important thing is personality reached through any language, any form, any creative means used by the author." "What if I published it under the original author's name?" said Anaximenes. "That would work," said Harvey. "Roland Twelves," said Anaximenes. "I like that." At this the captain rose to his feet and asked Anaximenes to kneel before him. Then, pretending he was holding a magic sword whose blade was polished and shining, he gave Anaximenes a good whack upon the neck and another lusty blow upon the shoulder. Then he raised his eyes to the heavens and declared, "Behold the resurrection of that most immortal of mortals, that fountain which pours forth so rich a stream of speech, that glory and light of poets, Mr. Roland Virgil Twelves. From this day forward, the one kneeling here before me shall answer to no other name, unless it be to the initials R.T. Then the captain motioned for R.T. to stand, and they settled again into their chairs. "I guess I could rewrite this," said R.T., picking up the manuscript, "but I'd rather write something new." "How about parts 3 and 4? Asked Harvey. "Parts 3 and 4? Said R.T. "Why not?" said Harvey. "And whatever we said right now," said R.T., "would appear in part 3 and be recorded forever?" "Yes," said Harvey, "until the apocalypse." "Wow," thought R.T., falling silent and considering what he might be able to say that would be worthy a novel so great as his own. "Perhaps some poetry," he said. "That would be nice," said Harvey. "Finished," R.T. began. "It is finished. Nearly finished. It must be finished. Grain upon grain, day upon day, and one day, suddenly, there's a heap, a little heap, the impossible heap."
"Nicely put," said Harvey.
"Thank you," said R.T.,
"and read with conviction."
"Out,
Out, brief kingdom, continued R.T. Our horse is but a stalking shadow, a pool player that rides upon the bosom of the stage, then crashes rat-like to the ground.
Inspired, said Harvey.
Why should a novel, a messenger, a vacuum?
A vacuum? Said Harvey.
A vacuum, echoed R.T.
Go on, said Harvey.
Where was I?
I don't remember, said Harvey.
Neither do I, said R.T.
We were talking about the novel, said Harvey, and the sequel you will write.
Ah, yes, but how does one write a novel, said R.T.
You've just described it, said Harvey.
I have. Grain upon grain, one by one, day by day, and one day, suddenly, there's a heap.
A heap? Said R.T.
Yes, continued the captain, tracing the course of the idea that had just occurred to him. It begins as the seed of a thought, hovering in language, setting in motion a series of causes and effects, unleashing itself, swimming through the synapses of the mind into the field of consciousness. Then it penetrates, divides, multiplies, and attaches itself to a spot in the imagination. After that, it feeds until it grows into a recognizable shape. And then, with the passing of days, months, and years, it matures and pushes its way into the world.
Maybe I could try something easier, said R.T., like poetry.
Easier? Said Harvey.
Well, you could try.
Have you finished reading the adventures?
Most of it, said R.T., thumbing through the pages.
How about the part where we meet on the island of Corfu? Asked Harvey.
Who? Said R.T. You and I meet?
Yes, said Harvey, in the year 2013. Of course, you go by your nickname, R.T.
Of course, said R.T.
What did you think about the parts you did read? Asked Harvey.
Well, said R.T., like I said, I didn't read it all, and it is probably much better once you get into it. But I wondered if, when I dropped it and gathered the scattered pages, I reassembled them in an incorrect order. The first chapters, in particular, were hard to follow, with all that jumping around and falling from cliffs. And who has ever heard of a flock of eagles?
Just then there was a knock on the door, and R.T. got up to open it. As soon as he did, a flock of eagles swooped in and circled the room, then soared back into the night.
Yes, said Harvey, that is absurd.
Was there anything else?
Well, the treatment of women, said R.T., cleaning the eagle shit off the sofa, seemed quite shallow.
Yes, said Harvey, and for that I am much to blame, for I did not confess to the original Mr. Twelves a great number of my womanly exploits. To do so would have forced me to reveal the secrets of womankind that have long been the source of the power they wield over men. Of course, some of the deficiencies must be attributed to the author and his almost complete lack of understanding of human nature. But we adventurers are not at liberty to select the ones who will chronicle our exploits. And though our canvas be left to the hands of an artist who is blind and arthritic, we must be content with the portrait he paints, for anything is better than oblivion.
Yes, said R.T., I also had some questions about the language.
The language? Said Harvey.
It seemed kind of strange, said R.T. I remember one line, when Mahogany was with Adelphine, that said, "The elegance of Italy was there in the alchemy of her eyes."
What the hell is the alchemy of her eyes?
Alchemy, said Harvey.
Alchemy is the changing of one substance into another, such as iron into gold.
What does it have to do with Adelphine? Said R.T.
Well, said Harvey, I can't be entirely sure, for you are the one who wrote it. Perhaps it has something to do with Hermes Trismegistus.
Hermaphrodistus? Said R.T. Isn't that a man who thinks he's a woman?
Hermes Trismegistus, repeated Harvey,
was the leader of spiritual alchemy, who borrowed his name from the messenger god Hermes. He was also identified with the Egyptian god Thoth, and was the author of a series of alchemical astrological works which were studied as sacred by Egyptian priests.
"Why did he think he was a woman?" said R.T.
"For Trismegistus," continued Harvey, "alchemy was the life essence of life."
"The life essence of life?"
"The materia prima," said Harvey, "upon which his science was founded."
Footnote.
Among its many names are ether, mercury, Proteus, argent vive, and sulfur. "The Hermetists," continued Harvey, "do not speak of fire, air, earth, and water as being transformed into other things, but only of the first matter, or ether, being transformed into all of its possibilities."
"Like yourself," said R.T.
"Exactly," said Harvey. "Didn't you ever wonder about the Shakespearean exclamation repeated throughout parts 1 and 2?
"Shakespearean exclamation?" said R.T.
"You know," said Harvey, "a winged messenger of the heavens sailing upon the bosom of the air."
"Romeo and Juliet," said R.T., "the first time he sees her on the balcony."
"Exactly," said Harvey. "And who is the winged messenger of the heavens?"
"The raven," said R.T.
"No," said Harvey, "it is Hermes. And though Hermes the Greek, god of science, invention, trickery, and theft, is not identical to Hermes the Egyptian, the term messenger is, for the Hermetists, an allusion to the universal ether, which is the vehicle of interaction between the different planes of the cosmos."
"So what's the point?" said R.T.
"The point," said Harvey, "is to understand the relationship of the ether to the cosmos, and to purify your bound ether so that the divine ether latent in us will emerge from its present obscurity. That is what Adelphine's eyes did for Mahogany. And you have an allegory for the same process in the plagiarism of Aeneas's descent to the underworld."
"Aeneas's descent to the underworld?" said R.T.
"Yes," said Harvey. "You remember when Mahogany plucked a cluster of grapes from Laura's garden on Sante, and with the golden bough penetrated the Tartarian gloom? That was how Mahogany freed himself of his own subjectivity and conjoined his mind to its lost universality. As soon as he offered the fruit to the hideous raven, he emerged on the Champs-Élysées, or Elysian fields, where he found the eternal essence of life personified as his lost love, Adelphine."
"Wow," said R.T., "I thought it was only a story. But how can I purify my essence?"
"Well," said Harvey, "first you must think for yourself. Because if you are steeped in the tripe and hogwash of public opinion, you will automatically pollute your impressions at the source and live in a world made of the lowest common denominators of culture. Only those who break away can find the poetry or essence that is there in the experience. Only they can recapture their innocence and see they are not human beings having a spiritual experience, but spiritual beings having a human experience. When they act with the knowledge that they are spiritual beings, they won't get caught up in the games that separate them from each other. They will know with conviction that they are connected with all of creation."
"Wow," said R.T., "and that was all there in the eyes of Adelphine? I should remember this stuff if I want to become a writer."
"Yes," said Harvey, "you should. And you should concentrate on developing a command of metaphor, for it indicates a gift for seeing resemblances and is the mark of genius."
"Let me write that down," said R.T.
"Also remember," said Harvey, "that no great writer, including Hemingway, ever thought they were more than a speck of dust in the void."
"A speck of dust in the void," mumbled R.T., looking for a pen and paper. "A speck of dust in the void."